morning, Roxas Soxy.
Good morning, Tam Tam.
Are you missing me yet?
I mean, how have we gone this long without seeing each other face to face?
Good day, mate. Do you have budgie smugglers in you? Do you know what a budgie smuggler is?
You told me this. It's balls, right?
No, it's not balls. It's Speedo. Do you guys have Speedos?
Yes, like a ball hugger, like a Speedo.
A ball
suit.
Hugger. No, yeah, like a yeah, hugger. like a ball, a men's ball hugger. Yes.
Yes.
As a member. So yes. Do you, I can't remember this, but do American men wear Speedos?
There are not a ton of Speedos usually on the beach. I mean, some do probably.
Yeah, but Australians do.
But those men can probably do just about anything. I mean, they're like the big rugby guys, right? And they'll still wear the Speedo.
Yeah, so I used to date a rugby guy. And honestly, he would come back to me every time he played a game because they don't wear helmets. Did you know that? So
it's like
you guys play like football with like no protection. So like, you know, he would never have like a helmet and he'd always get a concussion. But the funny thing about it too, is that they weren't able to have sex for the week, like before the game,
but the games were every week. So there was like no sex. It was like one day we could have sex on a Monday, but it couldn't ever be anywhere close to the Saturday. He had sex like maybe twice a month or something like that.
How did you even like continue in this relationship? You would like die. That's not even a possibility.
I broke up with him. Yeah. It's just not. But maybe our next guest can give us some insight into what dating is like. Because it's been a minute. Like, it's been a minute for me. And honestly, I think I would be pretty terrible at dating in this day and age. Like, I think I'd be terrible on apps. I would totally catfish everyone. I would, you know, I'd have so many. Because right now, as I get older, I've got so many things that I need to find in a partner.
The demands list has gotten a lot longer and a lot larger.
Yeah. So who do we have on the show, Roxy Soxy?
Oh my goodness. Well, we are so excited to have her back. She came in on like, I think it was maybe our first or second season.
Yep.
And we just loved having her. We did a podcast swap with her and we chatted about so much. It was such a great episode, just getting to know her and everything. So we knew we had to bring her back. Because she's going through a lot of life stuff right now, and we have to know how she's doing and what's going on. So without further ado, let's welcome Violet Benson.
Hi, lady. Thank you for having me. What life stuff am I going through?
Well, we're going to get into it, but lifestyle, life change, like going through like the egg freezing process and that kind of stuff. Cause that does take a toll on your body. And I heard also that it's like very emotional and takes a toll on your mental health too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. But I'm so glad that I did it. And I hope it encourages more women to do it. But first, I guess I should introduce myself. I think I've been becoming more aware of it, that sometimes I go on podcasts or other people, and then I hear what the listeners say, and sometimes they're like, I don't even know who this person is, not just me specifically, but people in general. And you're like, right, not everyone's gonna know.
Yeah.
So I'll introduce myself. I'm Violet Benson. I'm also known as Daddy Issues on the internet, and I also have a podcast called Almost Adulting, which is around mental health and dating.
And you, last time we spoke to you, you said that, you know, daddy issues obviously changed your life. And the more I watch your and listen to your show and I watch your Instagram, I realized that like you were always coming into your own. But now I feel like as we're in our 30s, I'm almost out of my 30s, but like you really are just completely open and also vulnerable. Like when I look at your Instagram now, I'm seeing like there's a lot of vulnerability coming through, and that really makes me feel close to you, even though we don't know each other that well. I think that, you know, showing the side of you that is suffering, which I mean we all suffer, it really does connect you to people. And I think that the IVF and the egg freezing and that whole journey was a big deal for me to watch, because I'm even thinking about freezing my eggs and I've got two kids, you know? So can you talk us through that process, why you decided to do it, and And was it what you thought it was going to be?
I think I'm very happy that I made the decision to not go through Reddit or other chats to see other people's experiences. I think that's one of the worst things, in my opinion, that sometimes you can do is go and read all that stuff and just scare yourself before it even starts. And luckily, I wasn't ever afraid of needles. I'm able to conquer fear by using logic. So in my brain, if I know I can't die from something, I will logically then understand that it's going to be fine. So in order to avoid any fear, I literally, anytime I do any type of, whether I'm at the dentist and they're putting in a needle in my mouth or I'm drawing blood, I have to look at it. And that puts me at ease because I see it happening. And then just, because a lot of times the fear happens to be in our mental state more than it's actually the physical. So sometimes when you think something is more painful than it is, you start to think that you're feeling it being more painful than it actually is. So luckily for me, the needle stuff wasn't the hardest part. That was pretty easy breezy. I was injecting myself for 2 weeks, a couple of times a day, and I also filmed it. I wasn't even planning on documenting it, to be fair. It was just, I think I posted one thing about it. And then suddenly I got so much feedback from so many women saying how they were thinking of doing it, which I was surprised because the only reason I did it because I just felt some pressure to do it because I'm not thinking of having children right now. I'm in my 30s and I felt pressure. Like, I know I should be thinking about it. I don't feel ready. What if I never feel ready? And I thought it would be a great way for me to do it just to have, just in case I don't have to worry about it when I'm older. And also I didn't think I was even fertile because I was on birth control until last year. And I had this weird assumption. I think a lot of women who are on birth control many years have this weird worry, which is one worry that I had that I just assumed that meant I'm not fertile because there's so many girls I know who have been on birth control most of their life. I was on it since I was 17 when I became sexually active. And until last year when I'm 33 and I figured, well, I've had a boyfriend come inside of me before and I didn't get pregnant. So it must mean I'm not, you know, I can't get pregnant. Lo and behold, to my surprise, I found out that I'm incredibly fertile, which is another thing that I found out that a lot of women are not as fortunate. So it was interesting for me to go through so much feedback from so many different women about women who have been struggling to go through the whole process, women that have it easier. And some women would take it personally with me that I was fertile and they would get upset if I talked too much about being fertile, even though I was just giving as much information as possible. And I think it was a good way for me to document it because then it was inspiring for other women who are in their mid-20s, in their late 20s, in their early 30s, mid-30s, to just go ahead and do it, to get it out of the way. Versus a lot of times, I think us women, we try not to think about it and we wait until we are much older. And then that's normally a lot of the time when issues arise and women are a little less fertile because we got a little older. So I think egg preservation is a very good idea for a lot of women that they should consider, especially if they can financially afford it because it's not cheap. I do know insurance covers some of it if you have a really good job, if you work at like Disney or something like that. Then, yeah, you get lucky. But
how much is it? Because I don't know. Like so that people can understand like what the cost involved is.
I would say minimum 10 to 20,000.
And then do you have to pay every month, every year for them to store the eggs?
Yeah, I pay $750 a year to store the eggs.
Okay.
Which is interesting because when they, you know, I live in Tennessee now and there's, you know, women's rights are completely under attack. And, you know, the idea that birth starts at conception, which is when, you know, if there's embryos on ice, I know you've frozen your eggs, but if there's embryos on ice, my question then is if birth starts at, if a life starts at conception, what happens to all the eggs and the embryos that people have frozen? Like, what like, do they have, do you have to pay for them for the rest of your life? And then your children then have to pay for them. Do you have to birth all those embryos? There's just like right now where we are in politics when it comes to politics, because it's like, I think egg freezing is amazing, but then what are the repercussions for a lot of these red states when you do freeze your eggs, you know?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's really murky right now with everything that's going on. And I think hopefully like things will kind of at some point reverse back to where they were before and really just keep people's freedom, you know, at the forefront and not try to strip people of their rights. But it is an interesting topic because I really don't think that it's shaken out that much. You know, I mean, people are so focused on, you know, a woman being pregnant, you know, like with the child in her body, that they really aren't talking about like the embryos or the, you know, frozen eggs and things like that. You know, it remains to be seen, I think.
I think the bigger conversation that I realized from this would even go as far as the fact that I think when it comes to women's health, what's not discussed as much is the mental health that goes behind a lot of these things, that whether it's postpartum depression after pregnancy, whether it's somebody who went through an abortion or somebody that had a miscarriage or even going through the egg retrieval process. To me, I wasn't aware of, because it was easy breezy for me up until the procedure. And then afterwards, I was experiencing, aside from physical pain, that I wasn't explained that that would happen because I have PCOS, so I produce too many follicles. But it was also the mental health afterwards. And when you Googled it, when I Googled it, like, how, when are you going to be okay after egg retrieval? And like, literally all the scientific journals, all that, it says, as a woman, you should be good to go back to work within a day or two. But that wasn't happening for me. So A, I was in physical pain. So I'm confused because the science journals, articles are telling me one thing. And then B, I wasn't okay mentally. And then I'm thinking, I don't see this anywhere in these medical journals and medical doctors saying that. So is there something wrong with me? Am I okay? What's going on with me? Until I had to Google, I feel depressed post egg retrieval Reddit. Go into Reddit chats, and the Reddit chat was like, I'm so happy today, but for some reason I started bawling at lunch and I don't know why. And I was like, oh my God, okay, so I'm not crazy. And again, I'm a logical person. So I couldn't attach my sadness or anything I was feeling to anything. So I'm thinking I must be going, something's wrong with me, versus, my hormones are still over the place. I didn't process that that's still a thing. I just assume you scraped everything out of me, then I'm back to normal. Why is no one telling me that now I'm going to be emotional until my next period or maybe post my next period? Why is no one telling me I'm feeling suicidal? Like literally after my egg retrieval, I was like, I had all these thoughts, like no one loves me. No one gives a shit about me. I'm going through all this stuff and like, I'm all alone. And I had a friend staying with me at the time and she literally checked in on me. She was going through a breakup and she checked on me. She's like, hey, do you need anything, blah, blah. And I said, no, babe, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. She walks out of the room. I sit down. I'm like, why does no one give a shit about me? And it's like, it's not even logical. It doesn't even make sense. But that's how I was feeling. And I had no idea that I wasn't alone, because everyone focuses sometimes, especially in the medical world, so much on our physical health. And no one's telling us of all that. It's like, oh, you're just being emotional. You're just being a woman. No, I think there's something off with my hormones. I'm not just being emotional. Even PCOS, no one really explains to you what you're going through. And you have no idea that there's something. It's so weird. I think that's one of the things that we don't focus enough, not just for women, obviously for men as well, with mental health. We're so behind with mental health for men when it comes to therapy. But I'm saying for women, a lot of times it's more like, well, women bear children. It's part of it. And you're just supposed to do it, versus, okay, but is anyone checking in on her? Is she okay after giving birth? And now a full-on mammal, I'm just thinking my sister right now just gave birth. You know, she's leaking from her breast. She's leaking from her private part. She has to wear a diaper. Like, is anyone checking in on these women? Are they okay?
Yeah, that's exactly why, you know, I said that at the beginning of the podcast, because I've had other friends that have done egg retrieval and done the whole process, and they say the same thing. They say, my mental health suffered, you know, emotionally I suffered, because there was no support for them in those, you know, in those lanes. I mean, yes, the physical, you know, they took the eggs out and did the whole thing, but there was no, and this, I think it speaks to a broader you know, part of our healthcare mm-hmm. system in general, that we don't value, like you're saying, mental health. And there should be a component of that when you go through something that is so altering, like this process, especially when that's fucking with your hormones like this, you know,
when you have a baby, they say, I think it, what is it? Day four, or day six, mm-hmm. you get the sad, they call it the sads or the blues. Mm-hmm. And I just remember it hit me like a ton of bricks. And it's because all that estrogen and progesterone, it's so high. And then when it drops so fast and you just don't, your body's not slow. Like, you know, over the course of a period, I definitely know that there's certain days that I'm worse than other days, but you mm-hmm. just don't expect that. But I felt so low day six. I think it's day six, day two to day six after giving birth. And then you've got a baby and you're like, I'm supposed to be the happiest I've ever been. Yeah. Like, this is horrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if people just talked about it more, it's not even the support. It's so you don't feel crazy. Someone lets you know, including the doctors, instead of saying, are you feeling any physical pain? It's like, how's your emotional? Check in. But I mean, my sister just gave birth and I would say she's not making the most sense, but I luckily I'm trying to be as understanding as possible. So even hearing things like this about day six and all that, I'm like, okay. Like, okay, for example, my sister gave birth and for
How far out is she from giving birth?
Last week she gave birth.
Oh, it's gonna be six weeks before there's some kind of normalcy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she gave birth to her third child mm-hmm. and for 3 days it was more me kind of on call. Can mm-hmm. I come to the hospital? And her husband kept saying, wait, come now. Wait, actually, no, we can't because there's a limit of, I think, two people per in the room or something. So it was more kind of around their schedule. But of course, I'm not going to say anything. It's not about me. But I'm kind of changing my schedule around whenever they're telling me to come. Okay, don't come, whatever. Then finally, the third day, I can come to her house. I come to her house. I try to be with her as much as possible. And I massage her feet for a whole hour because one of her feet got swollen. Mm-hmm. And so I was just massaging to help with the swelling. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday I called her about because I just had surgery yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I called oral surgery. So I called her about my, when I woke up from just the drugs or whatever, mm-hmm. and I called my sister to tell her about how I feel better after my surgery. And because mm-hmm. It's something I've been really worried about for the last 10 months before going through it. And instead my sister was like, are you always this selfish? joking. And I'm like, what? And she goes, I'm literally in so much pain from my epidural because they did it wrong. And apparently, and I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I can't, how would I know? You never told me. She goes, well, I mean, cause you didn't ask. Cause it's always about you. And I'm thinking, and I'm like thinking, and I was just
with the hormones talking.
I know. I was sitting there thinking, how would I process or know what to ask? I was just like, well, Karen, why wouldn't you just, she goes, there's a 1% of women, they can have the epidural in the wrong area in the back or something that they can suffer from. Anyway, my sister's one of the 1%. So I was just like, okay, I'm so sorry. You're right. I should have asked what's going on with you. And then obviously we talked about her, but afterwards I was flustered because I called my mom and I'm like, mom, am I crazy? What just happened? I was calling her about my surgery that it went well. And she called me selfish because I didn't ask her if she potentially could have the 1% thing that women pregnancy can have.
But you also like, I, as I get older, it's like, you can't judge other people's pain. Like you went through something that was traumatic for you and it was hard mm-hmm. for you and it was stressful and anxiety ridden for you and you're human. And I don't like it. Look, I'm a mom of two. And maybe in the beginning when I was more naive, I was like, well, how does that person understand? I've got two kids. But now I'm like, everyone's pain is valid. Like mm-hmm. just because I broke two legs and you broke one doesn't mean like that I win the situation. Like I win the pain threshold. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone is dealing with whatever trauma and whatever they're dealing with. And sometimes people who in what the world perceives as less stressful is actually having more mental health issues from it than the thing that's supposed to be more stressful. And someone's having a breezy birth, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, we shouldn't compare pain.
Give birth. I thank you for saying that. And I agree, but I wasn't saying that in order to garnish sympathy. I mean, I already got it from my mother, and I'm sure that I didn't act selfish in any way, but I, you know, it's part of the whole thing of not fully, I mean, even you just teaching me that's, you called it the sad.
On yes, days. It's that's mm-hmm. about 2 to 6.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I had no idea. So these are all loads of things that we don't know that actually happens with women mm-hmm. right after pregnancy. So being like, oh, it's the hormones, all that, I don't need to take it personally. Mm-hmm. And my sister just can't be my support system right now because she's going through her own thing. It's not personal, but I do believe that it's not a competition, but I'm also not going to hold it against my sister for calling me selfish because obviously she's not all there, but I just need to understand that if mm-hmm. I was more educated about what women go through post-pregnancy, mm-hmm. I've never gone through it.
Yeah.
And this is why we have to talk about all these things, you know, because like you're saying, like people just are not, they, even in this day, which you would think by now, you know, with all the social media and the podcast and like everything, it's still, I mean, people still don't know, you know, about women's health that way, you know, and it's like almost like shrouded still. And it's like, oh, but you're supposed to have the baby and then just be fine and be back in the saddle and like, you know, be up and going. And like, even with still sleep deprivation and these raging hormones. So hopefully, I don't know, hopefully it changes. Hopefully things get better.
But I feel like you forget.
So sorry.
You forget. You totally forget. And that's why people have mm-hmm. more than one child. Like I would love to, I think I want a third, but then when I really listen to what you're saying and I'm now back at the, you know, spinal block and getting my stomach cut open and my nipples bleeding and screaming at my husband. No one talks about the relationships. Like that first year, they say never divorce under two, like never divorce until your kid is over two, because you are not the same person for those first 2 years with your relationship. Like I hate, there was times, I'm sure you did too, Roxy, that I hated my lovely husband, like hated him physically.
Yes.
Hated him. And I didn't want to look at his face. And yes. I don't. And again, like no one talks to you about that. And then people leave relationships that they're very happily in because they don't know what is different.
Yeah. I mean, you have to give it time to kind of like settle in and work its way through. I remember my poor husband's like in the next room, but there was like a point, like when the sleep deprivation really, really kicked in, like 6 weeks in, because you can kind of, you're tired, you're exhausted, and you're kind of like going through the motions. And if you're breastfeeding, you're doing that and like waking up in the middle of the night, doing all the things. But like by the sixth week, when you haven't slept in like 6 weeks and you're doing all the things, I remember because my husband went back to work like the next week after I had a baby. But of course, for me, you know, like, thank God I had a night nurse and my mom. But like, still, you're still waking up. It's not like you're just like sleeping and, you know, getting so much rest. I remember it was like the sixth week and he had been back to work for a month. And I just like grabbed him one day by the shirt and I was like, you better fucking come home at like noon today and let me sleep. Because I'm like, you just get to that. You have like a breaking point at some point. So it's like, you can't go on anymore. You know?
When I was doing research about for a cheating episode on my podcast, I was doing the different highest percentages of when men cheat most often. So the highest was when women make more money than men. And then the second one in the percentile was post birth. And it's basically loads of articles for women on how to make sure to give enough attention to their husband, because the husband may get jealous of the attention that the wife is giving to their child. And I couldn't believe it. I tried to tell it to my sister and she started laughing and she's like, fuck off. Yeah. As if, because, you know, luckily my sister and her husband, they have a great relationship, but it's something that a lot of other women have experienced. The man, their husbands get jealous of the relationship that the mother forms with the child, and they feel neglected. So they go out and find some attention. How mad is that?
Yeah. It's because they need validation that they're worth something. But to be fair, I'm not justifying anyone cheating, but to be fair, like the woman that I know for me, I can only talk from personal experience. I knew for me that I was this like, I love you, you're my best thing in the world, to like, oh, now this is, you know, oh, now. And I didn't do it on purpose, but I didn't treat him, I think, in at least the first 6 months, like really even like a person. Like I didn't know that until I stepped out of it. And I was like, you know what? I wasn't fully aware of how I treated you. Again, he stayed with me. He loves me. Obviously didn't cheat on me. But, you know, I was yelling all the time. And I think I had postpartum depression, and it was not a very nice household to be in. So I don't obviously advocate cheating at all, but you can see why guys do feel, I know that it's like they need to, but maybe that's what you're saying. Men need courses or to talk about it, because they don't, and go, your wife is not going to be like she was for a good 6 months to a year. And you're just going to have to
get that. In general. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if you don't fully, if postpartum depression seems like a myth to some people, then assume, this person just doesn't love me or care about me, versus no, they're going through mental health issues and you're just not there. But if you communicate it, then you can work through it. I think it all, in the end, that's why it's important who you have a baby with, because that's why I remember when I was dating my ex, we're on and off for 8 years in my 20s. And the way we would fight was, well, you know, that American saying, cats and dogs. Is. And my mom told me, Violetta, if you got, like, this is supposed to be your honeymoon stage. Like, if you guys can't make it work before you're even married, you will never survive marriage. And then you definitely would never survive having a child. So I thought
that was interesting. Well, was the fighting, because a lot of couples have fighting as like a sign of intimacy. It actually is one of their weird love languages.
Like you, Roxy? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. But no, it actually, for a lot of couples, fighting is a sign of the intimacy. So do you think it was that, or was it just that it was like not the right person? You weren't getting along?
I would say when he would say things like, when we would break up and he would say things like, I'm going to run you over with my car. And I say, well, I hope you fucking kill me, because if you don't, I'm going to be coming after you. And then like later that night, we'd be having sex. I wouldn't say that's the healthiest relationship that you want to eventually, you know, you get old and you get older and keep fighting like this.
Yeah, so it's hard. Healthy relationship. So you also, I think I saw this on your Instagram, but you said you've been celibate for a very long time. Is that true?
Yeah, but it's okay. It's odd to me that seems like such a weird thing, when in reality, I'm just taking back dating to the old days where I get taken out on dates. I have fun and I'm just not sleeping with any of these men, especially if they're sleeping with other people. Why would I want to share my body where is just sharing all the fluids? I believe in energy exchange, and it's odd to me that it's become such a big deal. Like today, earlier today, I recorded a podcast and another podcast, and in the podcast, they asked, the girl asked about me and this guy she saw me with, and then she's like, okay, so how big is his dick? And I'm like, I don't know, I didn't see it. And I'm like, I think it's crazy, just because you saw us together, you just assume right away that we're banging, and like, course you're gonna high five the guy and then you're gonna shame the girl, when in reality, no, we hung out, we just kissed, like nothing else happened, because I don't need to sleep with every single guy that pays attention to me. I need to sleep with every single guy I go out with. It doesn't make me feel good.
So what is sort of bringing about this shift right now for you? Because, you know, with like egg freezing and with this like sort of change in like dating scope, like, is there something that's like kind of like you feel like an energy change, or like what's, you know, like what's going on?
My issue is that I will fall into a relationship. It's actually me just avoiding being in a relationship with someone just because I slept with them. Or it's for my mental health, because I know it doesn't make me feel good and I get attached right away. And then I'm not able to think logically of, is this guy kind of racist? Like, does he believe, you know, okay, he doesn't believe in abortions. Should I really be sleeping with that? You know, all like those thoughts in my head. And I'm just like, I can just see us being together. It's like, he's homeless. Yeah, but he me, and it's just because he was inside of me for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So it wasn't good for me. And I mentally am better when I'm able to. And plus, you bring back dating, where I feel that if they don't call me, I don't give a shit, because I didn't sleep with them. So for me, it's whatever, it works for my mental health. Everyone out there is, you know, they can do whatever they want. And I'm not shaming someone who likes to sleep around, because it works for them. It doesn't work for me. But I will say, for my listeners who are in situationships, it doesn't seem like anyone's happy in that. And I believe in situationships, the person that benefits the most is the guy. So I want to take it back to dating. You want inside my vagina? Court me. Buy me flowers. Take me out on dates. And I make it very clear. And I will say, I believe that women set the standards and men follow. So when people say these comments of, you know, dating just different now, blah, blah, blah. No, then you just have to find your people. Not everyone is okay with it. But I will say, regardless of who I've dated so far, regardless of age, regardless of what they did for a living, when I tell them I want to get taken out, I want you to buy me flowers, I want you to take me on dates, I've never had an issue. From musicians to accountants to whatever their profession is, they've always been okay with it.
Mm. But so what's your biggest turnoff then when you're dating someone? Obviously, one of the turnoffs is probably trying to get into your pants, like straight away. But like, what is a turnoff then when you're dating dating a guy?
Lack of effort.
Mm.
I think that's a turnoff for most people. Lack of effort would definitely be a turnoff. But look, all guys will try to have sex with you. Mm. If you have a hole, they'll try. It doesn't matter if he's an asshole or a nice guy. They both want to fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you set the standards. And of course, in the beginning, they're going to see how far they can go. But when you say, no, I'm not interested in having sex or this and that, they follow the rules. Mm-hmm. They're like a little, you know, it's not that. Of course, at this point, I haven't had sex since 2021, end of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to think, maybe
just one.
Like just one, you know.
Are you missing it? Are you missing it, or do you not really care?
Oh, I would.
Do you miss it?
Be okay.
I mean, at this point, I'm already over masturbating. Like, how much longer?
The vibrator is broken over and over again, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, hasn't been great. But at this point, I don't even know why I'm doing it.
Mm.
Well, you're doing it, like you said, because you're probably looking in this time of your life, you're looking maybe for the guy you want to have a bit, I don't know, maybe to be in a long-term relationship with, to have a baby with. Maybe you're just wanting to find the right person. And again, like you said, you can't find the right person if you're sleeping with all of them, because I agree with you. When I have sex with my husband, he can do no wrong. Like, honestly, he is the best guy. He's the bee's knees. And when I'm not having sex with him, we fight. So I understand that. And I think it's women. I think it's just biologically women, gatherers and hunters. And when you have sex with a guy, like, you connect on a deeper level and it's hard to walk away. I think that that's like a biological thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't want to sleep with someone. I feel that for me, it helps me gain my power. Maybe I'm too much of a control freak and I am holding, it's not like that I'm holding sex over people, but it's more saying, I don't want to sleep with someone unless I'm choosing to be exclusive with you. So I've dated men. All of last year, I was dating different guys and we did other things than except sex. Like, it wasn't that we didn't do other things. We did other things, but for some reason, for me, I just attach sex to such a different type of intimacy that it made me feel like I can survive a breakup if it doesn't work out versus if I was sleeping with them, it would be harder. But it would also allow me to get to know each other, because if I was going to sleep with someone, then I probably would stop wanting to hear them talk. Because me and my ex, we used to just fuck all the time. And he wasn't my best friend. I didn't know how to have intimacy. I thought sex was intimacy. I can count on both hands the amount of men I've slept with. So I've always been that type of way. But as I got older now, post my breakup in my late 20s, it's more me getting to know now what I like, what I don't like in dating, what was toxic, what wasn't, and kind of learning how to, I'm looking for a best friend before I make it to physical. Because a lot of times you rush into the physical and you don't realize that the emotional hasn't caught up. And that's what you'll get. If you sleep with someone quote unquote too fast, then you're like, oh, he's changed. Did he change? Or is he actually the same? You just assume that now he's supposed to call you more or not follow these girls or all these things, when in reality, you haven't caught up in the emotional sense, because you haven't actually got to know each other. You just rush into sex because it felt good for 5 minutes. So I'm looking for a best friend where we can get to know each other, and then the sex is going to be better. And then when we finally sleep together, we caught up to our emotional connection with
Cameron, do you usually wait, like in your past, have you waited to have sex, or was it like pretty quick as soon as you met?
Well, I lost my virginity on my parent in this house, on my parents' steps of this house, on my 18th birthday. And I met my husband at 22.
Mm.
So I was only sexually active from 18 to 22. But here's the deal. And I think you know this. I was very teased when I was at school. I was an overweight kid. I had braces. I was made fun of a lot. And then, you know, when I started to take care of myself, I had a little bit of a change, a physical change. And I started to get attention. Never had attention before. I didn't really know how to handle it. So when I was 18, I dated the entire suburb of St. Ives, which is where my parents live. I kind of went crazy with dating because it made me feel like I was worth something, because I felt so worthless for so long. That sex and physical attention based on my looks or my body was what I needed to feel enough. That's fucked me over as I've gotten older, because I realize we all get older and your body starts to sag. You have kids, your boobs start to sag, you get more of love handles, you have wrinkles, and that really affects me, because I feel like without some kind of like looking good, I feel like I'm not worth anything. That being said, back to your question, I had quite a bit of sex from 18 to 23, because, again, it was the first time anyone had ever wanted me. But I would say I only regretted three of them, probably. And it goes back to that, you know, now as I get older, I realize that I only slept with them because I felt bad. I felt bad that I had been with them, dated them, and I hadn't given it up. But I don't know what I would be like now. Again, I've been with my husband for 15 years, I think. So I don't know how I would be in the dating world. I probably would be like Violet, and I don't think I would sleep around. Not because I think there's anything wrong with it, but just because I want someone to like fall in love with me before I show them all my stretch marks. That's probably what it is.
Stretch marks is just like, I want to have more of a connection, and I want it to mean something even for me. Look, if I was one of the 20% of women that can actually orgasm from just their hole, I would sleep with everyone, but I can't. I'm like the 80% of the women who can't orgasm from their vagina and orgasm from my clitoris. So it doesn't really benefit me to sleep with someone the first time where I'm not coming. I mean, they can go down me, but then I don't have to have sex. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. I only orgasmed with my, well, again, 23, but I only orgasmed, and I might take this out, see if he's okay with it. I'm sure he'll be fine. I'm sure he'll love this. With him was the first time I actually orgasmed through sex.
Maybe
that's why I married him.
Literally. What a compliment. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I forgot what I was saying.
I didn't know that 80%, you said 80%.
Yeah. I think only 20% of women can orgasm from their vaginal.
Wow. Can you, Rossi?
Well, which we have had sex experts on the show who have said that the clit actually extends all the way through into the vagina. So what is technically known as like the G-spot is actually still part of the clitoris. So I think like you're saying, like it might be like the front, you know, like the front and part of the clitoris, but they say that it's the whole, that it extends the whole way.
But that also just means, the G-spot, where now guys like to put their two fingers in there and just tap it.
Yeah.
Where it's partly pee, partly whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's connected in a sense where if you have an orgasm from your clitoris, then you're more likely to have an orgasm from the G-spot afterwards. That's kind of how it's connected, but it's still not all women can orgasm from their hole. And sometimes when they think they're orgasming is because they're on top and then the clitoris is getting a vibration and all that. So everyone's body is different, but also that's how some women can have anal and they get an orgasm from the anal, but it's actually because the penis is hitting the vaginal walls and it's hitting the spot, and that's how they're orgasming, even though they think it's from anal, from their bum, but it's not. I've done a lot of research on it, and I've also had recently sex with Emily in my podcast. So every time she comes on, she just educates me on all of these things. But it is time for me to have sex.
You're like, it's time for me to have you could have butt sex, right? I call it butt sex. It just sounds better. And then you're not having sex. Although some people think it's way more intimate.
I mean, I may get attached. I don't mind. I mean, I'm down with anal. I haven't had it in so long. But I don't know. At this point, I don't think I'm asking for too much. I'm literally like, someone just court me enough and I will sleep with you. So just whoever I've been dating, a little bit of letdowns. So I'm like, okay, God, I didn't sleep with this person. But like, my standards are not that high. I'm not asking for that much. So me not getting it, I'm just looking for that person to find. I don't know. I need that emotional connection. Yeah.
On your Instagram, you look close. I've seen a few TikToks or reels about you looking at women. Is that something that you're into as well? Or is that just a surface thing that is fun and playful in the moment, but it's not something that you'd pursue?
So you must be on my close friends.
Sorry. I don't think this one was a close friend one. I think it was like you were looking at someone, she looked back and you're like, wow, or something like that.
I just genuinely find a lot of people attractive. I can appreciate looks. I would say I'm very fluid in a sense where I'm more attracted to who people are. I don't really have a type, whether it's with a man, their physicality, or with women in general. I haven't had a chance to fully date a woman before. I wouldn't say I've never been with a woman, but I didn't full on date a woman before. I wouldn't strike out that possibility, but I do think I'm definitely a little more drawn to men, but I think it has to do a little bit with my daddy issues where I look for a strong man.
Am I not going to be your close friends anymore? You're going to have to, all of a sudden,
you're off the list, Tammy.
I'm off the close friends list.
Look, I appreciate women's beauty. I think women are just so beautiful. I mean, women's bodies are art. I mean, you look at a man's body, it's a square, and then this long, weird, gross banana that's like, and the balls, it just like, what is that? Why does it look like that? You know, it looks like those skinless cats. And then a woman, their shape, like we have all these curves and the shapes. Like, how can I not appreciate the beauty of a woman's body? It's literally, they're literally walking art. So beautiful.
The sexual energy, though, I feel like is different because like a man, it's like the energy. Like I feel like I'm attracted to that masculine, like you're saying, like strong man sort of energy. And women can have it too. But it's a different sort of energy. It's not, I don't know, for me at least, when I kind of like look at men and women, and I too can admire a beautiful woman and say, my God, she is, you know, gorgeous. Like she's a beautiful body, all the things, or she's intelligent, whatever it is, all the good qualities. But there's something about a man and just, it's so like within them. It's like that energy, you know?
Well, I wouldn't say every man. I think definitely energies are different. I definitely attracted to women before and been interested in them, but I think with women in the past, it seemed that maybe I would be the more masculine one, and I actually like to be a little more feminine when I'm dating someone because I'm always in control with everything I do. And I'm such a control freak. People sometimes think that that would be that same way in relationships, when in reality I like to take the back seat in relationships and in bed. So I like to be very submissive in bed, and I like to be very submissive in relationships in a lot of ways where, you know, I can suggest where we can go on a date. I can suggest ideas, and then I'm like, okay, it's up to you to plan it out. That's where I kind of take the back seat. So then I look for a partner, regardless of gender, that can kind of treat me like a little cute princess.
I totally get what you're saying about in bed too, because Tamina and I have talked about this on the show. It's like, because we're so alpha, you know, just with work and in life and, you know, being mothers and the whole bit, that it's like in bed, it's like, that's exactly what I want, is the opposite. I want to be like submissive, have the guy take the reins, like throw you up against a wall, like do all the things, you know?
Yeah, I didn't correlate that. I didn't know that was a thing until I was watching. I just recently watched Jane the Virgin first time, and then Petra mentions it to Jane. that she likes to be very submissive in bed because she's a control freak in real life. And I was like, oh my God, that's why I like sex the way I do. Like, I never crossed my mind that that would be how you would be, you know?
Yes.
Because strong, powerful women are constantly, like, it can be exhausting. Like, you're always in the world, blazing your own path,
making your way. Yeah.
And it's just like, sometimes you just want somebody else to do that to you. I agree. I'm the same way. Like, I need someone to be pretty, like, aggressive, you know? I don't like sweet and gentle. I mean, it's fine to begin with, then.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, actually, why am I even talking about sex? I don't remember.
Well, you do know about zodiac signs. So I wanted to ask you, because I'm obsessed with the astrology in general. Okay, so I'm going to ask you. So I'm a Leo.
Yeah, I remember.
Shocking.
Yes, shocking. And my husband and daughter are Capricorns.
Ooh.
And my other daughter is a Libra. And those signs, I feel like my perfect signs are Aries or sometimes Geminis. I do like a Scorpio, although all my friends I've fallen out with have been Scorpios. Because we're like besties and we're so obsessed. And I know you're a Scorpio, but we're so obsessed with each other. And then, like, I think it's the Lion and then the tail. And I think we, like, I don't know, something about, I don't know. I think they're really good together or they're really bad together. Please give me some help with it, because I know you know a lot about this. So firstly, tell me about my family. So I have two Capricorns, a Libra and a Leo. So what works and what doesn't work?
I mean, your relationship clearly works. So I'm not going to sit here and say, sometimes, you know, Capricorn doesn't go. I think there's only so much you can equate to zodiac signs. And just because your zodiac signs are compatible doesn't mean that you're meant to be together. Like, I don't get it. I'm a Scorpio. He's a Pisces. Like, we should be together. Yeah. But if he doesn't want to be with you, then it doesn't work out. So I think it's still about two people wanting to make it work. I will say in your chart, you have loads of other signs. So sometimes the way you love, let's say your Venus is compatible with your husband and that's in your guys' first house, which is more apparent in your personality. So for example, I'm a Scorpio, but my Venus is Libra and it's in my first house. So my Venus, how I love, is in my first house. So that means I would have more apparent supposedly Libra in my chart. So sometimes I think I equate my flirtiness and, you know, liking to dress feminine to my Libra. Mm-hmm. Leo and Capricorn originally, they don't really go hand in hand, not normally, but I will say earth signs are really good at dating anyone because they're so grounded and they're very good at grounding other people around them. So I think just because your sun signs are not compatible, I'm pretty sure I bet you if we checked all the other signs, and let's not do it while we're recording this podcast. That's not the case, but like, I bet your other signs are compatible with each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The
I'm
Lion.
I'm telling you, Scorpios and Leos are like, I've had about six, the only friends that I've fallen out with, about four of them, they're Scorpios. And it's not because like there's something about a Scorpio and a Leo. It's just, like a firebomb in such a good way. It's so really wonderful. Perfect. It's like I could talk to Scorpio for hours, but then when it goes bad, it goes bad. You know,
how do you express your anger?
Ooh, depends on who I'm with. Like my husband, aggressive. Friends, probably more passive aggressive. Passive aggressive is not telling how I feel, but letting you know how I feel without having to be direct about it.
How does your husband deal with conflict?
He shuts down.
That's me too.
So what happens is it's like it's a run chase type relationship. So the more he shuts down, the more aggressive I get, because when he shuts down, I feel scared that he's leaving me emotionally, physically, because I don't know what's going on. I'd rather someone yell at me so I know how they're feeling than to not talk. And he said to me, that shutting down is better than being aggressive. Mm-hmm. And because in society, if you're walking down the street and you're pissed off at something and you shut down, that is socially acceptable. Whereas like if you're walking down the street and you're pissed off about something, you yell at someone, that isn't socially acceptable. And I said, yeah, but in relationships, I'm just as scared of you shutting down that you are of me screaming at you, because he had a very tumultuous upbringing. So like, but then I also had relationships with family members that used to shut down. So like, we're both living in this fear of like, he shuts down, I yell. Then sometimes I get so frustrated that I will shut down. He won't yell, but he'll start to run after me. And that's kind of the cycle that we are trying to break, which is this run chase type relationship.
Yeah. Well, I would say that is not really about zodiac signs. And I think it's just more your communication skills, but there's no wrong way with how you react to arguing, because I personally shut down and I get overwhelmed when I've had friends or relationships where they need to confront me. I mean, even my sister, my own sibling, where they need that conversation now. And for me, I just get more backed in the corner because I shut down because I don't want to say anything I'm going to regret. And I need to process logically what's happening and how I feel. So there is no right or wrong way. But I think at the end of the day, when it comes to that, is you have to fight to come together instead of fight to break up. And a lot of times in relationships, I used to fight to break up where I want to win. And really, what am I winning when in the end, we're both sad because we're not together, versus fighting to come together where you have to figure out, okay, I shut down and you yell. Is there somewhere we can come in the middle? Can we take an hour where we take a break and then come back and have a conversation? So like, you know, you have to kind of come in the middle where you can both agree what you both need to feel safe, versus being like, well, your way is wrong and my way is right, so let's just go my way. When you both grew up doing something completely differently, because at this point, both of you are not going to change. So you're going to have the same argument over the same thing over and over again. So I think it's about coming together, and it's nothing to do with your sun signs. It has to do with just how you grew up communicating, what you're used to.
Mm-hmm. That it's hard though when you're heated and you're in the moment, you know, to like really have that step back. But our therapist told us to have like a safe word, like you would say computer, whatever your word is. And that would just cue your brain to sort of step back and like try to de-escalate. And taking, you're right, Violet, taking that like the time away and just trying to come back. But it's hard to do when you're in the middle of the heated moment, you know?
So much easier. It's like when you're a basketball coach, it's easier to coach than to actually be the one to play the professional basketball. It's so much easier to give this advice versus when I'm in it and I think I'm right. And because my first reaction is either to take a step back, or if I feel in a corner, I'll just say, you know what, then this is not working out. And I got to learn from my sister that they never use the D word, divorce. Mm-hmm. It's not funny. It's not a good threat. You don't use it unless you mean it. So that's like, they have specific words that they'll never use. And I think that's really good, because my first reaction with any time something's not a fairy tale is maybe this isn't working out, and expect the other person to chase me. So they say, then you don't like me, then I don't want to do this. And I'll be like, what? So I'm also, just because I can give good advice doesn't mean I'm always following that advice.
We have safe words around our kids because I think when we show our patterns of how we fight in front of our children, I feel like it gives them the blueprint to their next relationship. And they're like, well, mommy yells and daddy shuts down. So it's like, you know, that's normal to them. Or if we start to yell at each other, I want them to choose someone in their partnership when they choose a guy or a girl, whatever. I want them to choose someone that respects them and talks to them, you know, with great communication. So if we are not communicating in a healthy manner, I feel like that's going to ride off on my kids. I feel like I've become a bit of a better person because of my kids, because I can't say all the things I want to say. Not that I could before, but I felt like it wasn't going to affect more than just me and my husband. Now there's two little girls with their ears perked up going, you know, what does this look like? And is this normal?
Okay. I do think that one thing we'll never realize is that it doesn't matter how much you think you're protecting your children, your mm-hmm. children will always still have some type of childhood trauma, whether mm-hmm. or not they realize it or not. That's the mm-hmm. wild thing, because mm-hmm. you can't be a perfect parent and you don't know how you're going to affect your kids. Because, for example, my parents made sure to never fight next to my sister and I. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was an adult, only I think the last year or two, that I realized I was repeating a pattern without understanding that it was happening, that every time there was a disagreement with a partner that I was dating, right away, I thought it meant something was wrong. And I said, okay, then we're not right for each other. Because, and I didn't realize it had to do with the fact that I never saw my parents ever fight in front of me because they're protecting us. And I remember when I got older, one time my mom and I were sitting and she goes, she was just nonchalantly talking a couple of years ago. And she's like, oh yeah, I remember. Remember when we first moved to the US, I was 14, moved to the US. She goes, yeah, you know, your father was really annoying me. And I started looking for some new places. I was going to divorce him, but then, you know, things worked out. So I didn't have to find a new place. Anyway, what do you want to have for lunch? And I was like, what? Wait, mom, what are you talking about? She goes, what? What do you want to have for lunch? I'm like, no, before that, you were going to divorce my father? She goes, yeah, he was really annoying when we first moved to the US. It was just like, he was the first time us really living together. He was too much. And I'm like, when? I've never seen you guys fight. And so, you know what I mean? Because they were doing their best to protect me. And fast forward, I didn't even realize that that was affecting my own relationships, where I have one disagreement with a partner and I'm thinking, this isn't normal. My parents never fight. This isn't supposed to happen.
That totally resonates with me, because I grew up the exact same way. My parents never fought, never raised their voice in front of us. Like, everything was like smooth sailing. So now that you're saying that, like, I've always wondered, like, is that because they were so happy or what have you? But it makes sense now when I fight with my husband that I'm like, oh my God, everything is like wrong. We're like wrong for each other. This is like not right, you know, because it does. It goes back to your childhood.
So I don't have the answer to anything anymore. I honestly, I start to question myself when I think about all these different things. I'm like, then what is the answer? How can you protect your children from anything if you're still getting good trauma, regardless of what you try to do?
I think the most important thing that I've learned having kids is the aftermath and the apology is so much more important, unless you're saying things like, I hope I run over you with a car. Like, maybe that's not the best. Or like, I'm going to chop your dick off. But if it's like a normal fight, you know, we make a point where we like kiss when we've made up in front of our kids. And we say, hey guys, look, mommy and daddy have made up and we love each other. And conflict, I have a daughter who is very sensitive. And so she gets very riled up. And last night she was saying some really horrible things to me. They weren't horrible. It was just traumatic for me. She was like, why should I talk to you? And like, you know, I would never be able to talk to my parents like that. And this morning she wrote a note to me and she said, I'm really sorry that I spoke to you like that. And I apologize. And I was just like, I love you. You were obviously going through something. I'm always here for you. Yes, it did hurt my feelings. I'm human and it did hurt. But thank you for that apology. And I don't think she would have done that or thought to do it if she hadn't witnessed that, the aftermath. And I do it to my kids. Sometimes I yell at them and then I'll sit down. Mm-hmm. I was really overstimulated and I'm really sorry. Like, I never had my parents apologize to me, and just because it was that generation. And like, she was like, yeah, it really hurt my feelings. And I was like, I know it did. And I'm really sorry. Like, I'm really sorry that was screwed up.
I really like that side of TikTok, though, where I've seen, even though I'm not a parent, I like the side of TikTok where I see parents now where they shut the door and they go, oh my God, look, I love my daughter, my 7-year-old daughter, but fuck, she is so annoying right now. Yeah. She won't. And just to see that, because it's almost like, oh, then you understand, like your friends who have children, then they feel more normal because you get to express like, I love my kid, but it won't leave me alone right now. Or the fact that you get to find out that you may not attach to your child when you first give birth and you may not, you know, I think it's all so healthy to know, or even the fact that Mike, you expressing that your daughter hurt your feelings the other night and, or vice versa. I love hearing that because it makes you feel like, okay, these relationships are possible and there's no such thing as one perfect way.
And it's also our own trauma too. Like, she was really angry last night and I had to take my own accountability because we now share the same clothes. She's 10 and I'm small, you know, like, so she wears a size 12 and I wear an extra small. So like, this is the same, we wear the same clothes. And I bought her like 10 new things and she was so excited. She hadn't been shopping for a while. And I wore her sweater yesterday on a podcast because I didn't have, I'm at my parents' house, I didn't have a sweater. And she was like, it's not new anymore. Like, you've ruined it. And like, I went straight to my trauma of like, well, I bought it for you. And, you know, well, then you can't borrow. This is what I said, like a child. I was like, well, then you can't borrow my sweatpants because it's a transaction, right? You borrow my stuff, I borrow your stuff. But when I thought about it, I was like, damn, and she's a 10-year-old who just got some new clothes and she doesn't want her mother to like fuck it up and like put her perfume on it. And it's like means something to her because now she has an identity. And I think when they're young, you feel like they don't really have, they're just an extension of you. And then you realize, oh my goodness, she's her own person who wants to wear her, you know, NYC sweatshirt and she doesn't want her mom because it's not cool anymore. And it was just like my trauma just so like rearing its head being like, well, fuck you. Like, you know.
My sister explained it perfectly. We went to Disneyland with her two daughters and her husband, my sister's husband. And I forget what one of her daughters was doing, but we took something away from her. Maybe it wasn't hers. I forget what she was holding something. We're like, no, it's not yours. Give it back. And she started crying. And I'm like, oh, come on, relax. And then my sister explained it perfectly where she said, we don't realize that we have a whole world. We as adults have so much going on. We have work, we have outside. And for children, based on their age, it's like her world right now is just kindergarten and her two best friends and this little wand at Disneyland. That's her world. Like this wand means the world to her. This is her thing. And when you process it like that, you're like, right, this child, like for you, your daughter, it was her shirt. Like she got 10 new clothes, 10 new items. And that's her world now. She gets to tell her two best friends about her clothes. But now mommy wore one of her shirts. And then it's like, that kind of ruins my current world because her world is so small and we don't realize how cute that is actually, you know?
So cute.
Yeah. You have to step back and really put yourselves in. It's hard to do because whenever I have a disagreement with my daughter, my first inclination is to react, you know, and just like, you know, get the frustration out or whatever. And it's the hardest thing to put yourself back in that place, you know, because we don't tap into our inner child as much. We don't look inwards like that a lot of the time. And it's so, for me, at least, it's really hard to get on that level and just really, you know, and I feel like it's so humbling too. I mean, I feel like the apologies to the kids are just as important as when they apologize to us for doing something.
Yeah, I can't imagine. That must be very humbling.
I got to tell you guys a quick story before we go, but I'll tell it really fast. But we went to the beach in Australia and my daughter has this dog that her grandma just gave to her, like a little toy dog. And she hides her toys so her sister will find them. But she hid it so well in the sand that we couldn't find it. So my husband dug for 2 hours the entire beach to try to find this little dog toy. And we didn't find it. And she was talking about your own little world. She was hysterical. You would have thought she lost her best friend. She couldn't breathe. So then I have a question and I put it on my social media. I said, do we teach her the lesson that she, if you bury your toys, you lose them? Or does my husband go back to the beach with a shovel and buy the dog toy, which is from Kmart or like a Target, and pick up the dog toy again and put some sand on it and like pull it out from the sand and be like, we found your toy? Or do we let her learn the lesson that if you bury your toys for your sister, that, you know, you might not find them again? And, you know, like 63% of people out of tens of thousands of votes on my stories said, learn the lesson. And I'm like, isn't she too young to take that wonder away from her? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think my mom made a good point recently. And she said, because when I was talking about my niece and I said, she should be better at dance. Like by 5 years old, I was already in gymnastics. Mommy put me in gymnastics, you know, Russians. So you put me in gymnastics, blah, blah. My mom said, you know what? I realized talking to your sister, let kids be kids. They will have the opportunity to learn, to be adults. Let them be children. So I think why already take that away from your innocent child? Like, let her have her happy moment. That's her world. What, like, as if she needs to have some lesson of, well, if you bury things in the sand, it'll be gone. So learn that eventually. I think people are always way too harsh on other people's lives. I think that's so, it's always like, well, I would never do that. Well, do you have a child? No. So how would you know?
That's the thing. When it's your own kid, it's like, you don't want them to feel that pain too. Like I would, I'm a softie. I would be like, oh my God, David, go to the store, like get the toy, do the whole thing. Because when they're that young, I mean, there's no emotional regulation. It's, you know, you're breaking, not breaking them, but it's like, it cracks them a little bit.
It's her world. Like, why does she need to learn? She's 10 years old. She really needs to learn a life lesson right now at 10. Yeah.
And I do think a little bit my husband wants to be the hero, which I understand. He didn't have the best upbringing. So like, there's a part of him that wants to be like the saving grace. And maybe that's a great thing for his world too, you know, to feel like he can give something to his kids that he never got as a kid. Mm-hmm.
Well, did you know, based on research, it shows that whatever your love language as an adult is whatever you didn't get to have as a child. So like for my love language as an adult is touch and words of affirmation, because I didn't grow up with it. My father's love language that he showed me that I didn't realize was love was acts of service, because he didn't get that from his alcoholic deadbeat father. So that's normally what your love. So for your father, for your husband, he's just trying to now give his children something he wasn't able to get himself. And I think that's the sweetest thing. And I think there's nothing sweeter, obviously, maybe I'm being biased, but there's nothing sweeter than a daughter and father relationship. And to, you know, for your daughter to look at him as her savior, that is just so endearing.
Well, we're going to go get that Sandy dog toy right now. So
let him be the hero, Tamman. Just let him be the hero.
Well, thank you so much for coming on again. I hope I see you in LA at some point, because I know we cross paths like all the time. But I would love to do that. And where can everyone find you? I'm sure they already know, but in case they don't.
You can find me on Instagram at Viola Benson, or my meme account at daddyissues_, or my podcast on every Tuesday and Thursday everywhere called Almost Adulting.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. We are Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And we're Women on Top Podcast on Facebook and Women on Top Official on TikTok. Follow us. And I am Roxy Manning, and that is Viola
Benson. And we are Women on Top. Oh.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time, from an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.